have a good time. Put a smile on your face, yeah. KBKM and Elation Radio. Even brighten your day and help you through the night. Bring you good music. KBKM and Elation Radio. And here's your host.
A while to get to this place. I'm so glad I'm in this space, accepting all my flaws, embracing authenticity, 'cause there's nobody quite like me. Oh, I like being me. Who I'm created to be.
Never given up on me. Well, here we are again, Jadasa Live broadcast on Elations Radio. I am your host, Cynthia R. Bennett. Here on the Jadasa Live podcast, we talk about issues dealing with domestic abuse and neglect in the community. Our platform is used to raise awareness, provide resources, and offer hope through educating, edifying, and encouraging. I want to thank our for listening in and ask if this podcast is helping you and assist you, your family, friends, or associates. The Jadasa organization is asking you to donate into this much needed cause to help victims and their children. You can do this by going to our website at www.jadasa, that is J-A-D-A-S-A.org, or you can hit the PayPal donate button, Or you can just go straight to the paypal.me website / jadasaorg, JADASAORG, one word. And we also, of course, have Cash App, which is the $ Jadasa STL, JADASASTL. And we want you to know that your donations are fully tax deductible. But before we get started with our program tonight, I want to remind our viewers that registration is now open for our Fall 2021 Developer Program. This program is an 8 Saturday morning program for girls ages 10 through 19, where we teach about the basics of entrepreneurship, and we teach them how to create mobile apps. So if you have a young lady who is techie or wants to talk about their business or their careers, we are there to help them to navigate, just to understand some of the basics to pique their interest into a much-needed field that is mostly male-dominated. But we're going to change that. And so we also, at this developer program, we have weekly group circles that discuss social issues such as attitudes and self-esteem and peer pressure, some of the things that our girls go through and battle with. We're there, and we have therapists on site to talk so they can share their feelings and also to help them with the other things, as like I said, the entrepreneurship and the creation of a mobile app. Space is limited. We want you to know that space is limited. Once we're full because we have to abide by the CDC guidelines. So I want you to go out on the website after the end of this podcast at jadasa.org, and I want you to register your daughter, your granddaughter, your sister, your niece, or your friend for this fall workshop. And also, before I get started, let you know that we will be having a Wednesday starting September. Let me make sure I get that correct date. It will be September the 15th. We will start our weekly support group session on Wednesdays, September the 15th. It will be every Wednesday from 7 to 8:30. All we ask you to do is to go out to our website and register. We will have that up soon. Register, you can call the 800 number or you can email at crbennett@jadasa.org and let us know that you would like to attend. We are there to help, to share, to cry. Everything we talk about, it is it stays within that circle. Everybody's there. We've been there, done that. I've been there, done that. But guess what? If we can glean and help and let one another know that we are there for each other, we can come out of this thing together. The reason why we ask for your identification when you show up, we have to make sure that we are being safe, not only for you, but for us as well. So we are aware of who is coming on site. Let's be honest, the times and changes are different now, so we have to be wise. And so we are just asking you to abide by that. We want you to come. It will be on Wednesdays. I'm telling you, it helps me a lot. You know, we talk about different things. We do different activities to decompress, to get our minds off of things and try to look at things in different ways. I promise you, it's going to be life-changing, and it's going to help. And so I just wanted to put that out there, to put that before you, that I will be posting on social media, and I also will be posting on our web page soon. And we have a new web page that's up and out. I like it. I haven't went through it a lot yet, but I will go through it tonight. But I want you to be aware of these two services that Jadasa will be erecting in September. But again, make sure you register your children, your child, or your daughter for the developer program. So let's get started. Tonight I want to discuss about two things. One, I was just disturbed. And I guess because I was so busy, you know, just kind of ripping and running and going and doing things and take care of the stuff and attending things this weekend, I had no idea until I actually went out on the web today to look at research and stuff that there were two women recently killed in Ferguson. Ferguson is where Jadasa home base is. That's where our office is. It's in our backyard. It's right literally in our backyard. And the story says that the two women killed over the weekend in a suburban St. Louis home break-in were likely the victims of a domestic violence dispute. And it says that the killings happened around 7 p.m. Saturday. I was home then. And when two people forced their way into a house in Ferguson, investigators said the break-in led to a fight between the intruders and the residents and ended with two women in the home being shot to death. Officials did not immediately release the identities of the women killed. The police believe that they know at least one person that is involved. So, you know, when they get the one, they go get the other one. But they had not made an arrest as of yet when I read the email this morning. And so I'm like, okay, come on. You know, this is getting to be too much. You know, this is getting too much. And so, you know, with that being said, you know, reading that wasn't even the topic that I had, you know, was talking or planned to talk about, but it just goes into the segue. It's a segue into this topic that I was had on my mind that, you know, I believe God was leading me this way to where this particular prosecutor in Jefferson City, he was talking about how domestic violence is one of the most underreported crimes. One of the most underreported. People are just not reporting it, you know, for whatever reason. And he said that domestic violence, man, this is in Jefferson City, but we know it's dropped here in St. Louis. But Jefferson City, he said it has dropped significantly, about 40%. 40%. That means out of 10 people, only 6 is reporting abuse. It's dropped. It's down to 40%. That's almost half. That means, wow, that's just almost half. And they say from, and this is quoted from data, this is from data from the Missouri Highway Patrol, that the domestic violence cases dropped. And I know it dropped in North County as well because when I was filling out the grant, the VOCA grant, in my write up as far as my narrative, I talked about how the services, even though the services are being depleted or money has been taken away or, you know, there's not enough money in this fund. However, the domestic violence cases have rose now. But the thing about it, if it rose from 5 to 8, but yet only 40% is being underreported, that number is really bigger than that. It's just a lot of people just not reporting. So it's happening. So you trust me, it is increasing. And so, you know, like you said, that would be an encouraging to know that this number dropped to 40%. It would be encouraging if that was a true number and if it was true. But it's more likely that the domestic assaults actually increased significantly. It's just people are just not reporting it. They're just not reporting it. And overall, even the statewide, and I talked about, you know, Jefferson City, I talked about St. Louis County, and it says overall statewide reports of domestic assault soared by more than 60%. So just think about this. 50% is if 5 people reported last year, now 10 people reported. That's 50%. 60% is 5 people reported, now 11 or 12 reported. That's not good, people. That's not good. That's not good. That's not good. The data shows that 188 offenses, and of these 188 offenses, it resulted around assault, battery, coercion, harassment, and sexual assault or unlawful imprisonment. So those offenses that was reported in 2020, and it says it was down, that number was down because it was 314 in 2019 and 272 in 2018. Okay, only 188 in 2020. You know that number is not right. 2020, everybody was in the house getting on folks' nerves. Everybody was at home. Everybody was, you know, stressed out. The kids wasn't at school. People wasn't at work. People was losing jobs. Everybody, so you know that 188 is a true number. Because it says the pandemic has forced spouses, partners, families, relatives, and close friends to spend more time together. But sometimes, you know, that's not necessarily a good thing, especially if you're in an abusive household and you got stress, you know, you got two or three kids at home, you know, they bored, they crying, they upset, they get into stuff. You know, the kids just gonna be kids. Really? They don't understand. They just know that their social life has been altered. And so they, you know how they get into stuff, they just start doing stuff just because they're bored or want something to do. Well, if you're already in a stressful household as it is with an abuser or a person that, you know, a spouse or somebody, that only escalates the issue. Escalates the issue. The report says that what I think we saw, what we did see was an increase in more first-time offenses. So they were saying this. So these increases, even though the numbers are increasing and their numbers are low, these are first-time people hitting on folks, first-time offenses. They're not talking about repeated offenses. People probably is like, you know what? I'm gonna deal with this the best way I can. We're in a pandemic. Where am I gonna go? You know, people have been through this before. They already know the ropes. They probably already got in their mind. There's nothing gonna happen because we're stuck in the house. Whatever their reasonings are, but this number has increased more with the first time offense. So you got new folks coming on the scene, putting their hands on folks. So why is it uncertain? Studies points out that the domestic violence is one of the most underreported crimes. I said that in the beginning. But that this prosecuting attorney office contends with particular prosecuting attorney offices. It says despite few reports, domestic violence continues to require a volume of prosecutors' time. Yes, they got to do the investigation. They got to file the paperwork. Of course, I'm not saying they ain't supposed to. That's their job. But we're just saying it requires a lot of time, enough so that some of the prosecuting attorney office. Now, this one, I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to be pull no punches here. I was shocked to hear this. Some prosecuting attorney offices have applied and received Federal Violence Against Women Act grant, which means the VOCA grant. Now, I'm not saying they should not receive it. I'm not saying it at all. I don't know where they get their money from. But, you know, I don't know if it's in a different pool, but they do other stuff too. So I'm just going to reserve my comment about that, but that I was just surprised to see that. And that VOCA grant that they received pays for the majority of an assistant prosecutor's salary. Majority. So I'm going to reserve my little comment about that because, I mean, that did raise my left eyebrow on that one. The grant allows the county to dedicate an assistant prosecutor full-time to handling only domestic violence cases. I'm not saying they shouldn't. We need to because somewhere we got to get a handle of this. We got to get, and I like what they're doing. That's why I wanted to bring this to this platform to share with our listeners, to share with the community that this is something that they're trying to put in the works, and we need to speak up, we need to talk up, we need to share because it's just too many of these these cases. It's just too many of these domestic violence issues. That's just, I mean, almost every week you're hearing something. It's like, you know, come on. Let's got to do something. We got to do that. And it says, you know, the grant is only dedicated for that person's salary, for the prosecuting attorney's full-time salary of only handling domestic violence cases. So what does that tell you? That means it's on the rise. The caseload is great, where they have to get someone to spend specifically just the time that they're working on this. One, it tells you how important it is. Two, it tells you how dangerous the situation is. Three, it tells you how widespread the situation is and out of control it is. They got to get somebody to do this. Now, maybe they should have been done it. Maybe these numbers shouldn't have been the way they are. I don't know. I'm just saying it's good somebody trying to do it. But it lets you know that this is an issue that we just can't keep just sweeping under the rug. So prosecuting the offenders, victims of domestic violence are encouraged to call the 1-800 domestic abuse numbers to file a report. And, you know, these law enforcement agents, they do a very good job of investigating reports of abuse. They do. In some situations where the safety of the alleged victim is in question, there is a little more urgency that they put on it. They do. But we want to ensure that law enforcement always tries to ensure that people who do come forward with allegations of abuse, that they are safe as can be. They remain safe and that they're protected. And so when that happens, this, you know, prosecuting attorneys, once they get the case, they often connect with alleged victims, with resources, you know, including the rape and abuse crisis services. They, because, you know, majority of times when there's abuse and then it's dealing with, you know, intimate partner violence, whether it's same sex or opposite sex or whatever, you know, usually sometimes rape and sexual abuse is involved as well. So, you know, if it's sexual abuse, you can call it however you want to call it. If you say no and they still go for it, that's rape. So anyway, but they're saying even with that, you know, the rape and abuse crisis services can only take so many people at a time. It's just a difficult situation. It's just really, really taxing. And reason why it's not taxing because of, you know, we just tired of the people coming or whatever. Not taxing that way. It's taxing when you're trying to do the best you can. You're trying to service the people and you want to do things, but you just don't have all the resources available. And when I mean resources, I mean time, talents, and treasure. I mean people. I mean money. And I mean space. That's what I mean. And that's what makes it taxing. And they say, even though with this rape crisis and abuse crisis services, in many cases, sometimes when the victim is not in immediate danger, the office, you know, the prosecuting attorney office, they collect reports and photographs and stuff. You know, they do a lot of things before they decide whatever the next step they're going to do, because they evaluate issues on case-by-case basis. And so they always talk about, you know, weighing things. If this is a repeat offender, a dangerous offender, or stuff like that, you know, they try to make sure that they handle the cases, you know, properly and stuff. But at the end of the day, with all that being said, all that jargon I just said, end of the day, the goal is to try to make sure that the victim is safe going forward. It's safe when they move forward. That's why I always tell people when you go and you get these order protections and you call these police and stuff, you can't just sit in your house and just go about your day like you did the day before. The day before, pre-order protection. Stuff change. People get crazy. They get aggravated and feelings flare. You got to change some stuff. You got to change where you go, how you handle folks. You know, you got to change. You can't be telling everybody what's going on and what you're getting ready to do, and can't be putting everything on Facebook. I'm getting ready to do this. You cannot. You got to have some kind of secrecy or privacy or some reservedness about your life or your situation until stuff blow over, until you are able to get yourself to safety. And, you know, we talk about that as well, even in support group sessions, you know, even in my crisis management, you know, we talk about those things. So, again, I want to put a plug out there. It's going to be starting September 15th, every Wednesday from 7 to 8:30, every Wednesday is going to be a support group session here in our local office. And, of course, you can wear your mask. We're going to be social distancing. We're going to do all that good stuff. We're going to make sure everybody's safe as much as we can, but we want to get you some help. We want to, you know, we want you to get it out. We want you to talk it out, and we help you and reason with you and help you reason and stuff, because you don't want that stuff bottled up. That, you know, that's why people start getting sick. Stuff be bottled up and stuff, you know. So even though it's to make the victim safe, but unfortunately, like some victims, you know, they say oftentimes it's a uncooperative. Some, if not outright hostile. People who's trying to prosecute a case. Well, maybe they thought about it. You know, all of a sudden I was just mad at him. No, we, you know, you got to make sure. This is what I want to know. I want to be careful the way I say this, because I want to make sure I said it right. If you're going to file charges, if you're going to go forward and get your order of protection, don't do it because you mad. Don't do it because I just want to get back. You do it because you want a life change. You want to get away. You have thought this thing out because that person, even though they wrong or whatever, this their life as well. So you can't be playing and going back and forth and playing with folks' feelings. Because, see, that's how people get hurt. You can't be playing with folks. People are taking folks out to lunch. You hear me? People is playing bikis nowadays. It ain't like we going outside and we go have a fight and box and keep. No, folks ain't doing that no more. Like when we was going to school, you have a fight and, yeah, you know, y'all friends the next week. They ain't doing that no more. They done took this whole thing to a whole nother stratosphere. Quit playing with these folks. Quit trying to play games with them, with folks' lives, with people's emotions. If you're going to go through it, make it up in your mind. This is what you want. You cannot be going back and forth isolating. That's how folks get hurt. And I'm not saying that about these people that I talked about earlier. I don't even know the case. I don't know what's going on. I haven't talked with anybody yet about that case. But I just thought I would throw that out there, because he was talking about how when they get ready to prosecute people and stuff, you know, the victims be uncooperative and hostile and stuff. Come on, y'all. Y'all, you know, you call the folks on the people. Don't go back and forth. This is your life as well. It's your kids. Your kids watching. And if they see you going back and forth, then they're going to be like that. You know, you got to show some strength, not even for yourself, strong for your kids as well, because you're stronger than that. You are stronger than that. I know you are. Yeah, we get weak in the knees. Yeah, we think about, that's a feeling. We understand. We're going to go through the process. Everybody has been there, done it. I've done it too. But you're stronger than that. We just want to make sure you understand the ramification of everybody, because whatever's going on is going to affect not just you and that person or the abuser. It's going to affect the kids, your family, your sisters, your parents, everybody, your friends, folks that know you, that's connected to you, that love you. It affects everybody. It's not just this circle of just you and the abuser. No. It affects everybody that's a part of your circle. But see, that's the part of the cycle of domestic violence that we as, not only prosecuting attorney office, but we as advocates, we try to break. And so when they try to deal with the batterers, if the batterers don't get prison time, they ought to attend this batterers intervention program or this batterers intervention plan that they have. Some agency here in St. Louis offers the services. JADASA does not. We do not deal with batterers. We working with the survivors, you know. There are some organizations, dual organizations, that deal with domestic sexual abuse, and then there are some got that program called BIP, which is Batterers Intervention Program. So they are out there. They are in the community. So, you know, there is help available. But we got to change the narrative. We got to change America. The Veterans Intervention Program was developed in conjunction with the Missouri Coalition, the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, MCAD. It's a component of a coordinated community response that was intended to hold veterans accountable. Hold them accountable for violence and abuse. It includes community education. It includes building awareness that results in a zero tolerance response to domestic violence. That's what the education and the awareness is for, and for them to hold themselves accountable. Because most abusers, you know, when they do stuff, they always say, you did this. If you hadn't have done this, I wouldn't have done it. You made me. They do not want to take accountability for their actions. Well, this program teaches them, no, you go hold yourself accountable, because we go hold you accountable. So we got to change the narrative. Communities need to develop and maintain community responses that bring together all organizations and systems that have contact with survivors or perpetrators of domestic violence. We got to come together to deal with the family. I remember somebody said that, and I think it was my husband. We got to deal with the family, because this thing affects the family, the batterer, the survivor, the kids. It affects everything. So we have to learn how to do work with the family, because it's a community. The community, the family is made up of the community. The community is made up of families, whether it's, you know, nucleus families, blended family, extended family, or whatever. It's made up of families. And so the primary method of intervention of this, should be group discussions that's led by trained co-facilitators using an established curriculum. They got a curriculum that includes strategies to hold the offender accountable for the violence. They have a curriculum in this intimate relationship. They have a curriculum. These programs that have these batterers intervention programs, they have a curriculum that will help. Discussions of violent and or coercive behaviors during group sessions help identify and confront offenders, control behaviors, and the program is for those. This is for batterers, to help them to control their behaviors, to help them to identify and confront. Because they got to identify. First of all, they got to know, we see you. With both eyes open, yeah, you. They need to know that, because I'm telling you, most batterers, they're very persuasive, and they are very charismatic. But you ain't too so charismatic that, you know, you just putting the wool over everybody's eyes. No. But however, the victim of abuse, we want you to understand, if you are listening in on this discussion, if you are on this Blog Talk platform, we want you to know, even though we mentioned this batterers intervention program and stuff, we want you to know and you to understand that the batterer owns the abuse. They own it. Don't take it from them. Don't say, well, if I hadn't done this, well, if I wish I had, if I hadn't said this. No, what you're doing is you taking the abuse from them and you putting it on yourself, which means if you constantly do that, they will never take accountability for their actions. They did it because that's what they wanted to do. So I just want our listeners to hear, if it's not you, you got a sister or friend or a cousin or your parents or a neighbor or somebody you know, you let them know. The abuser owns the abuse. Tell them don't take it from it. Give it to them. They own it. They need to be responsible for their own actions. Don't you hold yourself accountable for them. That's them. And so we got to break this cycle of violence that's going on. You know, so now I know in Jefferson City, they got these things called treatment court administrators. And from my understanding, they are now in communication with St. Louis County about treatment court administrators, and they are expecting to be hosting some type of virtual open house. So I'm looking forward to seeing that and to see what that's about. And this open house is in hopes to continue to research programs to break the cycle of violence and work with prosecutors and advocates to come up with the best way to reduce recidivism. Recidivism or another word for recidivism is bad habits that will cause an abuser to continue on the path that they're on. So they're trying to find ways to reduce bad habits. That's just the way to put it like that. And if they reduce the bad habits and they reduce the abusers to continue in that path, it's going to therefore reduce the workload. So, you know, there's this one particular prosecuting attorney. He talks about this, and he says that he feels confident that a domestic violence court is a reachable goal. Now, you hear what I said? I said domestic violence court. Have you ever heard of that? Right. He said it's a reachable goal. And it's obviously something that is important because, like he said, some of the other types of cases that come to treatment courts, you know, like substance abuse and stuff like that and drunk driving and all that, those who have one offense often have more than one offense. So like he was saying, it's a perfect type of case to explore, trying to get a specialty court to address it. So if we got this drug treatment court and we got this court where you go to, like when you have those DWIs and stuff like that, they have those courts and they come up with these community wellness, you know, issues and come up with these programs for you to, you know, get yourself together and stuff. Why can't they have a domestic violence court? I am in agreement with this attorney. He said creating a domestic violence court will be challenging because it is a victim-centered violent crime, right? Because most of the other ones is not victim-centered, you know, it's victimless, you know, you just drink too much or you on some drugs or something. And it's really self. You're doing it to self. But this is when someone else is. So one thing they're saying with this domestic violence court is we want to try to make sure that the people that they get who are victims, they want to get them out that cycle. We got to get them out that mind frame because being in a domestic violence situation, it's like a substance abuse or alcohol. It is codependent. You know, a lot of people that have been through abuse and stuff, they're codependent on that person. You know, soul ties all up in there because you'd have been intimate with them and you know, soul ties. Your souls are tied up in there. So, you know, sometimes it's hard to break that cycle. And so that's what they're trying to do with this domestic violence court, trying to get a specialty court to help the survivors, the victims, as well as the batterer. Because, you know, you can help one. We're always helping the victims. Of course, I am an advocate, and I am for the victim and the survivor. I am. But I also understand that you need to help the other person, too, because then guess what? They'll go to somebody else and probably do the same thing, and then you don't want more victims. So I understand and I agree and I see why they're doing it. And, you know, I have no qualms about that. Then they said judges also mentioned beginning with a domestic violence docket, a smaller step than a treatment court. That way the cases take place in the same settings and the courts can look at cases through the course of a morning or afternoon. So domestic violence judge, a court that's dealing with domestic violence, that's all the cases they will get and they will be looking at on their docket. So they're vacillating from, you know, a domestic violence case, capital murder, civic case, you know, a tort, somebody suing something, you know. No, their minds can stay focused on that scenario. And I think that's good. I think that's good. So I think that was a lot. Missouri and domestic violence, a little more than a decade ago, Missouri took steps to curb domestic violence. Let's see, I think in 2010, the Attorney General's Task Force on Domestic Violence made numerous legal recommendations to reduce violence and protect victims in the engaged. Then Governor Jay Nixon signed the majority of the recommendations into law, and it was passed unanimously. And you can also go out onto Attorney General Eric Schmidt's website. And among other things, the new law made it easier to get protection orders, to renew the orders. It required law enforcement to enter information, including information about child custody, into the Missouri Uniform Law, system within 24 hours of changes. It added domestic violence to offenses with abuse and or stalking, for which the state issues ex parte orders of protection. It allowed courts to investigate whether termination of protective orders are voluntary. The new law added victims, schools, and places of employment to places where protection orders are in effect. So if you have a protection order or order protection or a restraining order against your abuser, you can, and you got kids, you can put your kids' school on the order protection. Or if you're working, you could put your place of employment on that order of protection as well. So even if your kids miss school on Monday and he show up at that school and them people at your school know you got an order of protection on him and the school is a part of, they can call the police on him as well because he's violating their order of protection. Even on your job, you let them know I got an order of protection, I got you on here as well. Because, come, let's be honest, companies, they worry about their reputation and their bottom line money. They don't want neither one of them tarnished. But you let them know that they're on their order of protection, trust me. If Booger Bear show up on your job, and even if you on vacation and they know about it, they calling the police. Then that's a violation. The laws also included some automatic renewals. It added communication media to the ways that respondents may communicate with alleged victims. It made it a felony. It also made it a felony for someone who has been found guilty of violating an ex parte order within the past 5 years to violate another order. So if somebody, come to your job twice and they violate, and you got ex parte order or order protection the first time they violated, they got put in jail or whatever, and you got another one for another six months or another year, and they violated, okay, they're a felony. You can go to jail. That messes up their money. You can't get no job in no bank around money, kids, all that stuff. So if they want to just go be crazy, they got this stuff in here to fix them. So I agree with what they're doing. They're saying we do prosecute certain domestic violence cases, but they're limited. And so I'm just excited about this part. I'm not excited because it's more abuse case, but I'm excited that they're just trying to put this thing in place. And then they're saying that even where the federal laws that they have enacted isn't intended to decrease domestic violence too. For an example, all schools that receive federal funding are required by the Title IX to respond to intimate partner violence. So if your school getting some federal money, they are to respond to a violence, sexual violence or stalking. They are to report that stuff. And also, the government requires those institutions to offer training in efforts to assure students are aware of their rights. And the purpose of it is to reduce incidents and offer remedies. And it's also to get students to be more aware of their options to make them more comfortable coming forward to report incidents. Your child should not have to go off to some school and be violated and they scared to tell somebody. If that school getting some federal money, that Title IX money, they better you tell your daughters, tell your uncles, tell your aunts, your whoever. If they in them schools and that school is getting some federal money, tell them to report it. Let them report something happened and them schools don't report it or they don't provide some kind of remedy for you. They can get their money taken. Look it up, folks. Don't just listen to me. Don't just take my word. Look it up. Because what they're doing, they're trying to change the culture around trust. And they rightfully so should, by letting the students know that they can speak up if they think they need help. So they need to help them. They know they're providing these resources, partnering with student organizations. They're hosting conversations around healthy relationships. We always talk about that. We do that too as well, Jonathan. Helping them identify signs of abuse, whether physical. I said, when I read all that and I thought about that, I'm like, wait a minute. I need to be calling UMSU and all these other schools because that's what we do. That's what we do. That's what we do. But some doors are opening because we got some information. Somebody called us today. So the doors are opening, people. Just keep praying for us. Keep praying that God use us, use me, open up doors for more people to come on board to help, you know, provide funding and resources. Because guess what? If we're trying to get people to help us, we got to pay them. Because people still got to put food on their table and they're trying to help other people. You know, we have to. So we're just asking, this is just something that's really, I am going to be watching this to see what come of this. Folks, this is a community issue. This is a community issue. That old cliche that we grew up, what goes on in the house stays on in the house, that is the devil. That is dead and that is of the devil. We as a community need to rally around legislature to assist with this new program as far as erecting a domestic violence court. I think that's, yeah, they need to, we need to push. Y'all need to find out. If you all even hear something or talk it up. Call your congressman, call the court, somebody. I got a couple of friends who are federal judges. I'm going to talk to them about that. The recent story I addressed at the top of this program about those two ladies that was killed from a domestic violence, it's indeed a travesty. And it is happening more and more often. But I'm asking everybody to please remain vigilant in looking out for our families and friends and neighbors. Because with everyone's help, we can get help to those who need it most. Hold them accountable and get through so we can get through this crisis together. Not just only this pandemic of coronavirus, this pandemic or this epidemic of domestic abuse. And remember, if you or someone you know is a victim of domestic violence and abuse, call the help hotline number at 1-800-799-7233 or you can call the hotline.org and someone will be there. And remember, I'm going to leave you with this scripture, Jeremiah 29:11, where God says, for I know the thoughts that I think towards you. God is thinking some things towards you. And what is he thinking towards you? He says, thoughts of peace and not of evil. He's thinking of things, peaceful things for you. And what? To give you an expected end. He's giving you an end that you were expecting. That's what he's doing. His thoughts of you are peace. He's thinking things towards you. He's thinking good things. He's thinking peaceful things towards you because he wants you to get the end of what you expect. He wants you to have an expected end. So remember, JADASA is the community. You are the community. Therefore, you are JADASA. And JADASA is 24/7, 365, all day. Every day. With that being said, I want you to be safe, I want you to be well, and I want you to be whole.
Faces of those who are in desperate need. Do I use this Thank you.